Good evening, everyone. You've tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. And you know, this paradigm shifting situation has been going on for a few hundred years, but I recently met this wonderful woman, Linda Rhines, down in Costa Rica, and she had a lot to say about autism and homeopathy, and we talked about so many different aspects that I wanted to bring her on for all of you to meet and learn about homeopathics and what she's learned about autism and homeopathics and even more. So welcome to the show, Linda.
Hello, everybody.
Now tell everybody what the weather's like there, just so that they can curl their toes.
It's about sunny most every day now. We're not going to have any rain for 5 months, though, so everything's going to turn to brown, and it's already dusty on the dirt roads.
Aww.
But every day is full of sun, and thinking a lot about solar power and wondering why they don't have more solar power down here, because the sun is intense, where you kind of hide from it pretty quickly, but it is dry heat at least. And there's these Papagaya winds now that make for good surfing waves and make it more habitable because it's quite windy here by the shore.
Ah.
So we're hoping to survive the heat.
But it's beautiful, and if you're at the shore, you can go dip in the water, can you not?
Yes, exactly.
Well, I'm very eager to talk to you about, let's talk about homeopathics, how that works, like a little thumbnail so people who don't know get a little bit of a sense of it. And then I really want to talk about autism and things that you're learning on that. So,
okay.
Yeah, and you are a homeopath, right?
Yes, I am a professional homeopath.
Mm-hmm.
The way it works is there's a natural law called like cures like, and it dates back all the way to Hippocrates and Aristotle that they figured out this like cures like theory or law. And what it means is that if you take a medicine or a substance and it gives you a number of symptoms, then that same symptoms can cure somebody who's ill with those symptoms. So it's this kind of backwards thing of like cures like that was discovered 200 years ago by a very smart German medical doctor, William Samuel Hahnemann. And he took this natural law of like cures like and turned a complete alternative medical system using remedies that he proved on himself and his family and kids and everyone who would stand to take a small dose of a remedy. And
is it sort of like vaccination, Linda?
Well, a lot of people do think that, and I would have to say, though, no, it's a different, vaccines are a whole different can of worms. So this is actually an energy medicine, so it's more like acupuncture without the needles.
Oh, I see.
And it works
okay.
On the energetic level. So the idea is that it's not such a big deal having symptoms. Like, symptoms are good because they're your body's best response to overcome and come back into balance, back into homeostasis.
Hmm. So what I understand about homeopathics, and maybe Hahnemann took a little while to figure this out, that you, if you had the flu and I had the flu, our symptoms would be different according to what kind of personality we are. Is that right?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. It is a mind-body holistic kind of healing. So we do include all the symptoms, whether they're mental symptoms, like your brain is forgetful, or, you know, you're as well as emotional symptoms, if you have a phobia or anxiety, as well as any physical symptoms, because we don't have this, you know, what is it, Rene Descartes, you know, split between mind and body, where we don't believe that the body is just a simple machine and one part isn't connected to the other part. So we look at all the symptoms. If you come to me with the flu, I would want to know, you know, is it with a fever? Does the fever get worse at what time of the day? What makes you feel better? What are you craving to eat or drink that's out of the ordinary? So you have to actually put a focus on yourself that we're not used to as most Americans, because it's the opposite of the regular doctor who will just get, oh, flu, boom, here you go, here's your medicine. Mm-hmm. Whereas we could have 10 different people with the flu, and I could give 10 different remedies. And they're all good flu remedies with a good 200-year track record of helping people with the flu. But some people feel like their bones are about to break when they have the flu. That's also when they get dengue fever, which has been big down here in Costa Rica. So if you feel like your bones are about to break with the flu, and then you would go for a Eupatorium remedy. Whereas if you have one where you're so chilled that even opening the covers and sticking a hand out, you get chilled to the bone and you want to have your bed all neat, is a remedy called arsenic or arsenicum, which is made from arsenic, a poison. Hmm. But again, in safe, FDA-approved homeopathic doses of arsenicum. So, you know, depending on how your mental, physical, emotional, and physical symptoms are all playing together, that would determine which remedy you individually would need. With, you know, the pharmaceuticals that are a big part of regular medicine, they just want to put you in a box and give you the same one for everybody and the same strength. Homeopathy, we want to figure out what caused it.
Mm-hmm.
Because we think that about 75% of illness does have an emotional component to it.
Uh-huh.
So if we can get at what that is, a grief, an indignation, then we use that information to match the best remedy for people.
Well, it must have taken you a long time to get all this learned, did it?
You know, yes and no. It's sort of if you like homeopathy, it's kind of what you want to do on a Saturday night is learn about more remedies and more cases, because it's just, for me, very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
I only learned when what happened was my son was 5 years old, and he had to get a whole bunch of shots for kindergarten, and I thought, great, the more shots, the better, and so he got, I think the equivalent of 7 shots, because they put 3-in-1 now,
mm-hmm.
and he was fine after that, and then about a month later, he got a cough, and it went into pneumonia.
Oh, wow.
And it kept happening, and he'd get into bronchitis. He could never clear a cough the way he used to be able to.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to homeopath, and she said, oh, yeah, we see vaccine damage all the time, and we have remedies to cure it. So I was like, great. And then one dose of a homeopathic arborvitae tree, and his ears turned red, and mucus poured out of him for a week. At that point, he'd had a chronic sinus infection. So that's how I first got into it. And that year, when I just was going to a professional homeopath, of course, I was so intrigued by it after it kept working over and over in other little acute issues for my family that I decided to just with a book. I was helping friends and neighbors and my daughter's ear infections and everything. And then it turned out that my homeopath was also starting a class. It started on my birthday, and it was a block from my house in Boston. So it just seemed like it was meant to be to study it. And so I studied it for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
and graduated a few years ago. So they say you have to be practicing for 10 years before you're still not a beginner until you're really, you know, good at your craft. But the great thing about it is wherever you are, you can help yourself, your family, and other people, because there's simple things you can do, like arnica,
mm-hmm.
is just for any kind of bruising, any kind of trauma to the body. Similarly, there's a simple remedy called Ignatia. It's any kind of grief, you know, your pet dies or something like that. Because with first aid issues or acute things that come up, most people are the same. Most people bleed the same way. They get swollen ankles when they turn an ankle. So for first aid, it's less individualized, so it's really easier for a beginner.
Mm.
But I was amazed, even now, especially with children, because their own immune system, which is what we are focusing the remedies on, people's own innate healing abilities, which have evolved to be incredibly strong. We just work with them. So if they don't need us, if they can just spike a fever and be done with it, then we wouldn't ever give a homeopathic remedy. Just let your body do its thing that it knows so well how to do. Now, if it gets stuck with a fever and you have a fever for 3 days, and it's not budging at all, that's when you can come in with a homeopathic support remedy to support the body's immune system.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing that's really interesting about homeopathy is it's not a material dose. It's an energy medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So there's less than one molecule of the original substance of a homeopathic remedy. So when I talked about arsenicum, that's a poison, but we don't have a single molecule left. But somehow this information is imprinted on the water in the process of the remedy being made. It's imprinted on the water molecules and changing the structure of the water molecules.
Hmm.
And that is what is basically put on sugar. So it's like you're taking a sugar pill when you have a homeopathic remedy. So I think that one of the disconnects with this is it sounds really weird, you know? Like, you wouldn't just start, if you look at the theory of it, what, a water and the there's no molecules left and you're giving poisons to your kids, people just scratch their heads. But when you actually try it and you feel it, how it works, how it can relax you, how it can move you right through a block that you have, that's really when you get converted. And there's, you know, 60 different countries use homeopathy and 200 years clinical track record of how well it works.
Well, I know the royal family in England uses it, and I think in Holland as well, don't they?
Oh, yeah, it's very popular throughout Europe, Belgium, France. France is interesting because the United Nations ranked them as the top healthcare system in the world.
Oh, wow.
Number one. The U.S. is 37th.
What a surprise.
Not even second place. But one in three doctor visits in France, they refer you to a homeopath.
Isn't that
so
something?
In Europe, where they have a different, you know, universal health care, they're able to work together. And there's times, certainly, when, you know, if you're in a car crash, go to your doctors, go get sewn up. You know, absolutely, we believe there's strength in regular medicine. But, you know, if you have some kind of chronic illness or, you know, something that you know, I haven't been well since I got the flu or since I got divorced, that's when regular medicine really can't help you because there's a deeper emotional, maybe even spiritual component that needs to be addressed, and homeopathy can go that deep. It can go to interuterine, any insults for when you're in the womb. It goes back that far.
Oh, it does. So it releases pent-up energies, does it? Tell me, what is your process? Like, so if I came to you for the first time, you would use a very extensive interviewing process, wouldn't you? Or do you use kinesiology? What do you use?
Yeah, no, classical homeopathy, that's kind of the most common and tried and tested form of homeopathy, is when you look at your whole range of symptoms that you're from your entire life, and then you even look at the family history, and not just the medical family history, you look to see if there's any legacy issues, so any, you know, skeletons in the closet of any form, emotional, mental, physical, whatever. And then you look for patterns within the family because somehow, and the science is recently bearing this out, that somehow things are passed energetically amongst the generations. So you can look back a couple of generations and see where things just, there was tragedies that maybe weren't dealt with in a helpful manner that have impacted down the generation.
That's really interesting because way back when a lot of people had syphilis, apparently somebody had said about, you can tell by the structure of someone's teeth if they're carrying that from a couple of hundred years back, not carrying it, but carrying a remnant of it or a legacy of that impact.
Right.
I thought that was pretty intriguing.
Yeah, syphilis was a big one that we see. We even have a genetic classification system to look at the what you've inherited from your family of origin. And syphilis was a huge and really serious deep illness. And the way we see it as homeopaths is that if your great-great-great-grandfather had syphilis, it does, and he got it somehow cured with mercury or something like that, you know, and erased the symptoms of syphilis, it doesn't mean it got rid of that imbalance. So that can be passed down through the generations, that you have a tendency towards, it's called the syphilitic miasm. So miasm is a homeopathic version of genetic illnesses. And we actually have remedies that match it. And sometimes you see it really clearly. Syphilitic is actually the deepest sickness you can have. It tends to be people who are suicidal, very violent, tend to wear black, have no hope. So it's actually considered the deepest kind of illness, even
a goth illness, right?
Illness. Yes.
Well, I think that's intriguing. So then my next question is, I guess it's really useful for mental health conditions or emotional health conditions, isn't it? Not just the syphilis one, but the homeopathics.
Yeah, that's actually, to me, just with my personal interest in psychology, where it's most fascinating. And it's so easy. I had classmates in homeopathy school who are already therapists, so they would just know, absolutely know, what remedies could help people so easily. And if you agree with the theory that about 75% of illness has an emotional component, then you can see why you really need to get at that emotional piece. And it's just fascinating to me because I grew up in a very engineering mindset family, materialistic, you know. If I can't measure it, it doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. So when I think of how these emotions are playing into our health, it just fascinates me. Hmm. And to see how, you know, one dose of the right remedy can just undo so many, you know, I know people that have foregone years of therapy because one dose of the correct remedy can just kind of take the angst out of it. It can take the angst, whether it's a physical blow, or it can take the angst out of a grief or a turmoil that someone has gone through. So it's fascinating. How can a substance from nature do that? I mean, the remedies are all made from either plants, animals, minerals, most anything you can make a remedy out of.
Hmm. And they're potentated, right? Meaning they're made stronger by... Tell people a little bit about what makes them stronger.
Sure. There's two things to make a remedy stronger. You take the original substance and you dilute it. So we talked about putting the remedies in water. So the information is transferred from a material dose to an energetic dose. So it's diluted a lot to the point where there's not a single molecule left of the original substance. So that's the first way it's prepared. And that's what makes all these poisons safe and potent medicines as well. And then it's also succussed or shaken really hard. Kind of thwap, if you could picture a bottle of water thwapped against the palm of your hand or a leather book or something. But, of course, this is done mechanically through factories and FDA-approved, industrial. You know, you can make it at home, but it could be shaken like 50,000 times. So there are machines that do
this. You could get pretty tired by that.
Yeah. Then, of course, 200 years ago, the homeopaths had to prepare all their own remedies. Yeah. But now it's easy enough. You can get them at Whole Foods or any natural health food supply, and there's tons of places to order online as well.
That's pretty exciting. Well, let's talk about, I'm really fascinated by emotional and mental health because it's just a big interest, you know. But let's talk about autism because that kind of includes both of those, and it's called what? The autism spectrum, right?
Yeah, ASD, autism spectrum disorder. And it's funny that you brought up the syphilis because a lot of the autism clients that we had, there would be that syphilitic miasm that you could see through the family, that there was just something going through that was violent or suicidal or very dark. Things hadn't been resolved. And it could be, the parents or the mom when the child was in utero, but sometimes you could just trace it right up the family tree and see where it came from.
Could be hundreds of years, couldn't it?
Sorry?
Could be hundreds of years, could it?
Yeah. Usually, people don't know what's happened hundreds of years ago, mm-hmm. but usually people know, grandparents, was your childhood happy? Mm-hmm. If the answer is no, then you can get into where that might have caused pathology.
Mm. It's very interesting.
I guess the thing I learned about autism, working with a number of autistic children with homeopathy, is that you have no idea what kind of kid is going to walk through that door, because we saw such the variety of autistic kids. So the homeopathic approach is, no matter what your ailment is, outside of first aid, is, what caused the autism for you, and how does it play out with you? And the kids were just all so different. Hmm. You kind of thought we were just going to have a kid locked within who was spinning around and wouldn't say anything, which is just not true at all. I mean, they had all of their personalities and quirks and stories and things they did and preferences, just like everybody else.
Hmm.
So I think there's all different kinds of autistic kids, and what's amazing is how prevalent it is in comparison with how little anyone's hearing about it. When I was a child, it was 1 in 10,000 kids had autism, and now it's up to 1 in 50 boys. It's,
oh my gosh.
It strikes boys a lot more than...
Why is that? Why is that?
All of the illnesses that you can get, like the learning disabilities as well as other illnesses, hit boys more, and I think the the female hormones have some buffering effect, but it's really not studied. Why, I mean, to my knowledge, I haven't heard a good explanation of why it is boys and not girls.
So I think a lot of us at home will be thinking, if you have a little boy come in who's called autistic, he might have a difficult time presenting to you where his disconnect is, or like, can you tell us a little bit about what they might exhibit so that you can work with that?
You know, I'm sorry, you're breaking up here. Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. If you have a new child come in who's autistic or reputed to be autistic, how do you start? What if he can't relate his story? How do you work with him?
Yeah, we do rely a lot more on the parents and their stories of what is going on with their children. And I have to say, the autistic parents I've met, many of whom have formed the Canary Party, are just my absolute heroes, because not only have they dealt with such difficulties in their personal life, they're really reaching out to try to help other people. And a number of them are very convinced that it has to do with vaccines and it has to do with our medical system. And it's very hard to get that word out to anyone, but with alternative media you can. And the Canary Party, the autistic parents there, have done so much to help bring this issue to the forefront that it should be.
Well, tell me this, do they tell you that they had this child who had a vaccination and then changed? Do you hear that a lot?
Yes, all the time.
All the time.
And that's the disturbing thing. And we did there was another person who's another one of my heroes, a Dr. Tynus Smits from Europe. And he was a French teacher in his 30s, and his child was vaccine damaged. And so he decided to become an MD in order to help him. And then he went on to become a homeopath. And then he developed a whole system beyond homeopathy that included orthomolecular vitamin support for autistic children, and he helped 300 kids in Europe with autism, and he treated 300 kids with autism. So now his work is being taught around the world. But he said that 70% of the autistic cases he saw were due to vaccines and major cofactors to causing autism, and 25% was due to other medical pharmaceuticals that maybe like. The mom was having a nasal spray in utero. That's another really disturbing thing that we saw, was a lot of moms on antidepressants who had autistic kids, and we could make a homeopathic version of the exact pharmaceutical that the mom was taking while the child was in utero. And the moms always said, but my doctor said it wouldn't impact my child. And we know as homeopaths, anything can impact your child, or many different things can. In Europe, they use microwave bottles of milk to warm up the baby's milk. So now we make homeopathic remedies from microwave bottles of milk. So that was an environmental factor that was very significant in Europe, where that practice was common. Another disconnect is, not every kid who has microwaved, milk is going to get autism. But for some kids, they're susceptible to those mimickers or whatever the chemicals are in that particular kind of plastic. But not everybody is going to get it. Some people can, we're just all individuals. We're not a one-size-fits-all. So, many, many kids have no problems with vaccines, but many, many kids have problems. When you get a problem going from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 50 boys, in one generation, I'm not that old. unheard of.
So that's really scary. Well, so tell me this. You said then you create a homeopathic remedy. Do you interview them, find out about their history, and then build a remedy from that?
Yeah, back to that. So usually these parents that we meet at least, have figured out exactly what the cofactors are, and a lot of them have cured seen their children improve just with diet alone. But the parents, they go and research, all the kinds of alternative cures that are out there. They think about every single factor that could have contributed to their kids. They're very advanced, the parents that we tend to meet with, who have gone to a homeopath. So we look at what the mom says about the kid. What is the main issue? Oh, if it can't be in the same room as the sibling ever because it's too noisy, and then we take that as one symptom and we try and think of the remedies that would be good for that. Then we look at, you know, what the food preferences are, what the hardest part that needs helping to help this family. You know, if there's inflammation, you can do simple things like fish oil and vitamin C that helps with the brain, any kind of brain inflammation, which causes them to be hot and flap their hands. You know, there's orthomolecular vitamins that can help. And so sometimes we do classical homeopathy, which is what we do for anyone. That's what we talked about a little earlier in the interview, and that's when you just look at every possible illness, mm-hmm. whether it's physical illness, you know, how do you get sick when you get sick? Does it go to your GI system, you know, your indigestion, do you get diarrhea, or do you get respiratory, or do you get aches and pains? So just looking at any kind of ailment, your whole history, and then your whole emotional and your personality even, you know, are you hardworking, are you religious? It all goes into the mix, whatever's outstanding, to get the perfect match for you from a natural substance. So about half the time with autistic kids, that because they're either recovered or not already, or they were on the lighter end of the spectrum, maybe the Asperger's light end of the spectrum, where they can communicate. So if we can see clearly a classical remedy, that's what we start with. Mm. But a lot of times it's like, if it's called never lost since the MMR, and the mom knows the kid's fine, getting off milestones just fine, and then it was a deterioration at this point in time, we compare the timelines of when the deterioration happened with the vaccine records in very detail, and then it's obvious where to start. If it was just, you know, this since the DBT shot or this since the flu shot, then we would start homeopathic version.
Wait a minute, you're not coming through right now. We have to take a pause.
Oh.
So what you're saying is that you tune back in and try to find out what the turning point was in the child's health. Is that right?
Yeah, so I don't know if you got this part, but half the time we're able to just use our classical homeopathy where we just look at everything and come up with a specific individualized remedy that should support that kid's own immune system. Same way we would treat a kid with diabetes or any ailment at all. Or
so
any adult.
How are the results?
How are the results? Well, you know, I'd say that many of these children are very sensitive. Mm-hmm. That sort of might be a reason that they got autism to begin with, because they're more sensitive than the other folks, which is the whole idea behind the canary party, canary in the coal mine. So they are sensitive kids. So a lot of times they are impacted, you know, for the better. We've had one child that I work with, he was on the lighter end of the spectrum, but he was only working with him for about a year, and we had no more symptoms to diagnose. We just kind of sat there. There's no more remedies we can give you because you don't really have any unusual symptoms for a six-year-old kid. So that was just wonderful to have him graduate out and be done with that whole diagnosis. He was mainstream. That's the exception, though, and that I think the parent, we worked with the entire family as well, which really helped, the mom, and a lot of times the siblings need a grief remedy because so much focus goes on the child. And, you know, of course, there's some grief around the other sibling that doesn't get to have a childhood. So, in other kids, it's more like one step ahead, one step back. Mm-hmm. And another tricky thing is that you have to sometimes, like, have acute, we trade off chronic illness for acute illness. So, in order to deal with a chronic illness like autism, which is a deep on the mental, you have to have the kids go through maybe some ear infections, maybe some flu or diarrhea, because that's your body working to detoxify,
right,
to get stuff out. So parents little times get confused, like, oh, well, we got to get rid of the diarrhea now. It's like, well, no, actually, it's your body clearing it out. So let that happen. Let your body get out the toxins the way it knows how to do.
That can be very scary, though, can't it? It's like, oh,
absolutely.
We're poisoning
absolutely.
The child.
Right. And we're so trained, you know, and a lot of money goes toward getting us to think, oh, a fever, get rid of it, you know. Oh, mm-hmm. Diarrhea, get rid of it. But you're always working against your body. Fevers alone are so incredibly helpful. They kind of cook the germ that's that's bugging you.
Well, remember they used to drop people into boiling water at one point. Remember in the history of medical things?
What about boiling water?
They used to put people into very, very hot water to boil out their fevers years ago.
Right.
And that was a horrible
right.
idea.
Yeah, I don't know if that worked, but certainly your body's own fever works great. And 99% of the time or more, your body's not going to go past a certain level. Really, the only danger is dehydration. So keep your kid in the bath, keep them hydrated, give them any kind of liquids, and you know, usually you'll be fine. Because if you suppress the fever, then your body is like, geez, you know, I'm cooking a fever, I'm getting rid of the germ, and now you took my fever away, now I've got to have an even higher fever to happen. So now the kid spikes a higher fever, so it never kind of gets resolved, and that can end up in chronic illness. So the first thing, you know, I always did with my kids was suppress the fever, get rid of it, you know. But now, knowing what I know, I love fevers. Like, oh, that's great, you spiked a really high fever. And I know my daughter's immune system is pretty awesome, and she never had any problems with her vaccines. I also spaced them out more with her. But she just gets this wicked fever, and she sleeps. She's immobilized for a day, maybe two, and then she's good to go. So I feel like, you know, that for me is the best thing. I want them to get sick and get this, you know, the mucus out or whatever it is they need to do.
I understand that, yeah.
Balance.
Well, good for you. And your kids respond well. I mean, they like it, eh?
Yes, they do, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they don't have any, like my son was in third grade and he was teaching other parents about how it works. I mean, they kind of just intuitively grasp it.
That's
very
exciting.
Easily.
So tell me this, what about addictions and that sort of thing? I mean, do you know anything about homeopathic work on that subject?
Yeah, there's been some great work on that done with one of my former professors. She focuses on homeopathy for addiction. And in fact, I volunteered at our inner city clinic in Boston where we dealt with women who are addicted. And she's got some really good, because it was part of a hospital, she was able to get some really good research and statistics on it.
Hmm.
And one thing that I remember is that of the adults coming in detoxing from, you know, serious street drugs, 75% of them were helped with those things, with one remedy, Nux Vomica, which
really?
Is a great addiction remedy. It could be addiction for coffee or overwork, but a great way to undo any untoward side effects for medicines is, you know, you could just try the Nux Vomica right away. So, you know, these are women who are addicted to pills, so word got around very quickly in the ward that these pills were good. And so it did help 75% of the people get over their initial withdrawal symptoms. And then we were able to come in and do the classical, the full, you know, kit and caboodle, individualized homeopathy to help them on a deeper level.
Because, so the constitutional.
You know, behind addiction is the trauma. Mm-hmm. Sorry?
And that's a constitutional, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, of course, behind the addiction, these were women that were living on the street, you know, really down and out. So there was always so much trauma. So the addiction was, of course, just a mask against the trauma that they've been through. So we were able to help them with really, you know, good trauma remedies as well.
I should think that would be very exciting work.
Yeah, it was. Because this is a field that regular medicine, I don't think, has that much to offer.
Mm-hmm.
But it really was making a difference for these women.
So let's go back to autism. It's such a huge thing these days that I just want you to talk more about it. And if people have Asperger's, if people are full grown, for example, and you meet them and use homeopathics, is it too late?
It's never too late for homeopathy. It's because it's your own individual immune system that's being impacted. I think, though, in general, the sooner you do it, the better, just because at least what I've experienced with my own family and my clients is that when you're a kid, your immune system just is, like, designed to work. You know, like all those childhood illnesses that we were supposed to get in our show, like mumps and measles and chicken pox, you know, your body could handle that. It was good practice, you know, use it or lose it for your immune system. So I think children have that big advantage when it comes to their immune system, hopefully already working really well.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's homeopathy works for elderly as well, works for teenagers, adults. It's just there's a longer, longer illnesses, ailments, emotional, life takes its toll on people. Mm-hmm. So you would have a slower prognosis. If someone has, had a chronic illness for 10 years or 20 years, like you might have, then you would expect 10 or 20 months of treatment to be required. And that's not for autism. Autism seems to be, can take 3-4 years.
Oh, really?
Can be quite slow, yeah.
Oh, wow. Is that because whether or not it's about aging or chronic illnesses or autism, is it because you give a remedy and then there's a little bit of revelation of what's behind it? Is because there's like layers, is that right? Or is that something I don't understand?
Yeah, absolutely. We look at it like onion layers. And, you're kind of born and you might have this very open personality because nothing bad has happened to you. You haven't been sick. And then you might get a vaccine layer at some point, all too early, in my opinion, of this. And then you get a vaccine, and then you might have a grief, so you might get a grief layer, and then you might have, another. And then, of course, decades, you might have a divorce, you might have many griefs. So it just takes longer to unwind all the griefs.
So my question to you is, it might be interesting to be working with people who are dealing with a very frustrated aging. You know what I mean? Is like, mm-hmm. help them unravel some of the, what do you think about some of the victimization? Have you ever done any of that? That'd be kind of interesting.
Working with elderly, you mean, or victimization?
Either, any of those, but just, yeah.
I haven't worked a lot with elderly, except for within my own family, and I would say it's slower. It's definitely slower. You have to kind of go a lower potency because you don't want them to, do anything too sudden. So you tend to have to, and things tend to be chronic for decades for the elderly folks. Mm-hmm. And the other problem in our country, they're on 6 or 8 medicines.
I know.
And they're all interacting with each other. And then you have to straighten out, was that a side effect of that? Well, then just stop taking the medicine or take less of it. So it's very complicated with older folks.
And so when you take people off of pharmaceuticals, can you help with that? I mean, I know you're just explaining how intricate the interactions can be, but if it were a bit simpler, is it a good thing to do?
Well, that's something I could be put in jail to advise anyone to go off of medicine because I'm not a medical doctor.
Yeah.
So I would never tell anyone to go off their medicine. But what happens with homeopathy is if you're able to address it with homeopathy and have less symptoms, then you have less of a need for the medicine. So then you could go say to your doctor, hey, I think I'd like to try to wean off this. What do you think? And have that conversation with your doctor so he can safely wean you off of your medicines. But just an anecdotal story about the founder of homeopathy would often get called on someone's deathbed. And he was famous for basically, on the deathbed would be all the medicines that the person had. And he was known for, throwing them angrily out the window.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to go to our roots, and this was by, again, the founder of homeopathy wasn't a medical doctor. So he saw more people die from the medicines of the day than the illness themselves. Mm-hmm. But so he was he could tell them, get off your medicine now.
Mm-hmm. Because he was a doctor.
Yeah, as a doctor, he could do that. And 200 mm-hmm. years ago, he could do that. And, a lot of people go to homeopathy on their deathbed after they've tried everything else because it's no longer that well-known in our country. So a lot of times people don't get to homeopath until it's very late in the game. But I guess with the elderly folks that I've seen, their immune system is not as spry as it used to be. Mm-hmm. It does not have that energy. It is on a different phase of life. So it could still help, especially if there's an emotional component. It could help the elderly, or if there's a clear never well since, which means I've never been well since my mother died, or mm-hmm. This happened, or the flu, or the pneumonia, whatever. So that could be a good time to try homeopathy. And there are plenty of successful elderly who've used homeopathy as well. But
how about when someone knows, and how about if somebody knows they're going to pass and they choose it to help them with the passing? Have you ever heard of anything like that?
Yeah, that was another thing. I'm glad you mentioned that. We must be on the same wavelength. It is great for dying. It's great thing. There's arsenicum, which is the one made from arsenic. When you're restless and you're not at all okay with dying, that's a good one. Mm. Again, it's individualized, but there are these great remedies that can make your passing be much more peaceful.
I like that idea, don't you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. To be able to... And, you know, part of what we do, too, is we're just there in the crux of the turmoil and the pain. We're kind of like... we hold someone's hand when they go to their deep, dark secrets, is where we just need to be there with them. And that, the interview itself, if you're able to do that for your clients, can be hugely healing in addition to whatever remedy you have, because people don't normally want to talk about all their skeletons. And so the homeopathic interview itself can be highly therapeutic.
Now, that makes sense. People. And they may not want to talk about them, but really, essentially, they do, don't they? I mean, people really like to get released from some of that.
Right. And, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not quite clear on why it's more helpful than going to a therapist, but maybe because you can learn to think homeopathically even if you're not a homeopath. You can learn to look at the timeline of your life, to think about, why did I get such a bad case of mono when I was 20? Mm-hmm. When we always ask, what was going on with your life right about then? And then, you know, people usually take some while. This is probably similar to you, Veronica, with your line of work. But people say, oh, yeah, right before that happened, this emotional thing, or boyfriend broke up, or something happened, some kind of trauma. Many... breast cancer, there's different breast cancer support groups, and they all say, yeah, it came on and this whatever very stressful life event happened just prior, you know, or a year prior, half a year prior. So we help people with the interview think about, oh, yeah, why am I craving this food? Or, well, boy, it is just, you know, my symptoms are all better in the morning. Isn't that interesting about me? Mm-hmm. You know, they learn about themselves.
And you know, I've read things where there's, for lists of disease like cancer and heart and so on, there's actual personality descriptions on those, like suppression or long-held angers or sudden shock, or there's a lot of those kinds of descriptions written up, aren't there? Or maybe you haven't seen them. But
you mean figuring out, like, if you have heart issues, you might have issues with love, or...
Yeah, or sure. Loss, or really... it's just that there'll be a huge personality description around a certain disease. Like with cancer, a lot of times it's suppression or suppressing anger and not expressing, you know, who you really are or whatever. I mean, I'm simplifying because I don't remember all of it, but... I just think
it's appropriate. No, that is actually another big part of homeopathy, is this suppression idea. And with mm-hmm. cancer, it happens to be that it tends to be really nice people, really sweet, mm-hmm. but they're maybe not knowing or pursuing what they really want to be in life. They really haven't the strength or the opportunity to be who they are. So they might be in a bad relationship, or... You know, something that makes them always put others first mm-hmm. can actually play out in your body in cancer. And there's a parallel with what's going on the molecular level with your cells, is that the cells no longer differentiate from other cells. That's what cancer is. Those kind of cells aren't able to differentiate who they are and what they're doing, and they all become a big blob.
Well, that's interesting.
But that's sort of what's going on the emotional level.
How fascinating,
is that you're... Yeah, that's, so, you know, this whole idea of emotional health, yes, it really does play into your physical health. You can't always put others first, you know, you really, well, it's all about me, right? Where have I heard that?
One of my funny lines these days. Well, that's actually really intriguing. Have you worked with anybody with cancer before?
I have not had any cancer patients.
Is your specialty mental and emotional health? Obviously, all of it's emotional.
I am more focused on children, really. Children and working with entire families. Emotional stuff is such a big part of homeopathy that I guess I could call that a specialty, but I feel like any good homeopath is going to cover that emotional area. But if I could just say one more thing about suppression.
You can say 10 things. I'm happy.
Yeah, there's also this idea that you can physically suppress things with homeopathy. That's, I think, just a fascinating idea. One example is a common thing to do when your kid has a bad diaper rash is to suppress it with skin cream. We don't think of that. We think of like, oh, I'm just getting rid of the diaper rash. Mm-hmm. But the way homeopaths think is, oh, you're suppressing this imbalance because it's just the skin, if it's a chronic, you know, diaper rash, that's something with that baby is off. So often you would suppress it and it would go to an ear infection. So, okay, now the skin rash, the diaper rash is gone, but now your kid's got an ear infection. Hmm. So you go to the doctor and you're a good mom and you go to your doctor and you get your antibiotics and that suppresses the ear infection. And now it goes deeper to a deeper level, which is asthma, which we also have a big epidemic of. So if we see that pattern of, okay, first the diaper rash, then the ear infection suppressed by antibiotics, then the asthma, then that would give us an idea of the kind of remedies that we would need to use. And we would expect, in getting that child well again, mm-hmm. we would expect the child to have the ear infections, which is actually, the ears are huge for clearing out toxins from your body. So we want
so that
clearing
goes,
of the ears.
It goes from asthma back up to the ears, is that what you're saying?
Can you repeat that?
So it goes from asthma back up through the ears?
Right. So in order to, yeah, there's a, just that one thing we do as homeopaths is we connect the dots. So mm-hmm. we don't just say, oh, here's a remedy for skin ailment. Oh, here's another one for an ear infection. Oh, and here's another asthma. We say, oh, this is a really common root of weakness in certain types of individuals that we know about. So we see this pattern a lot, diaper rash, ear infection, asthma. Mm-hmm. So to cure it, we would get rid of, we'd target the asthma, but then we would expect him to need to have an ear infection because that ear infection is actually a good thing. Again, symptoms are good. It's your body's best attempt to get to homeostasis. So the ear infection, it might be painful, but it means that a blockage is coming out through the ears, is being removed that way. Hmm. So we would need to get that toxicness out somehow. So a skin rash is actually a way of your body detoxing as well. So when you get rid of that, now your body still has the same imbalance or the same toxins it's trying to get rid of, but it can't because you're not allowed to have a skin rash because you got rid of that with suppression. Mm-hmm. And then it can go to a deeper level because your body's own immune system will put something in the least invasive place possible. Hmm. And the skin is the least invasive place. It's away from all the important internal organs, you know, whereas asthma is actually very serious and life-threatening, and that's the lungs. So it's actually not good, obviously, to have the imbalance placed in your lungs when it started off on your skin. So we see that as all a connected imbalance. It's not three separate diseases. It's all the same person, and it's a common root that we are able to help with.
Well, and when you're working with such a thing, for example, with asthma, do you then link it to, say, grief because of the chest and lungs and all that? Do you link it
sometimes,
emotionally?
Yeah, that's, I think, more of an idea of Chinese medicine than homeopathy. But, yeah, there a lot of times you'll see those patterns between lungs and skin and grief, certainly lungs and grief. But it really depends on the individual. So, I mean, there's some people that can just have it just from having suppressed skin issues. It doesn't have to be just because you have pneumonia or asthma doesn't mean you absolutely have grief because, again, we're all individuals.
Well, that's right.
But it is fascinating to come up with your own patterns. You must be familiar with Carolyn Mace's work.
Oh, you bet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's fascinating, and you do see this with certainly men, and back pain is a great example where, you know, back pain is like, you know, the male, you know, breadwinning function is so strong in the men that I know. And then when you have problems with that, it goes right to the center of your back, which is, you know, that whole stability. And I'm not explaining this very well, but.
Oh, you are, actually.
You know, think of how many men have back pain.
And
know.
The vulnerability in the lower back, and they're holding up the world. At least they're trying to, right?
Right. And similar, I think a lot of women have throat chakra issues. And we do talk about that a little bit with homeopathy. We can actually make color remedies and sound remedies.
Oh, wow, really?
Just with Yeah, just with shining different colors of light onto water, we can make the same kind of remedies. So that's how I first came across the chakras, is we have, you can get a set of color remedies. And then blue, I think, for women is an important one, because a lot of times women in our culture aren't able to speak their truth, or they're not listened to.
Mm-hmm.
So
not taken seriously enough. But back to suppression just for a minute, it sort of occurred to me when you were talking about suppression that people subconsciously or even consciously suppress themselves by smoking and drinking, don't they?
Yeah.
I mean, that's interesting,
yeah, and,
too.
Yeah. And that's another one of my guest lecturers in school was a recovered addict, and so he understood the light cures light because of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? AA. Mm-hmm. It's like the only one that can cure another addict is another addict, right? That was the whole AA philosophy that's helped so many people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the light cures light, people can notice that in other ways too.
I like that. You got to kind of get in step, match it up, and then release it, right? Are you there?
Yeah, you're getting hard to hear. You said you
I said it's like dancing, where you kind of get in step, match it up, and then you can walk out of it or release it,
right? Right, and that's a big part of homeopathy, is a matching game, because we study the different remedies, and, we can even study the source that they come from. For example, we make remedies out of spiders and snakes.
And
ew. Think about it. Yeah, you name it, we can make a remedy out of it. Moonlight, sunlight, anything, really. So we make a remedy out of a spider, and you think about what the spiders do. They're really hardworking. They're really hyper. They're great ADHD remedies.
Oh.
So, a lot of times we get to make those connections. Minerals is a whole amount of minerals, like silica, for example, we make a remedy out of. And you can actually kind of stereotype what a person needing a mineral might be like, because minerals are very well organized and symmetrical in their molecular level, and well organized, kind of dry. And so you see the people come in, and they're like that. They're
well organized and dry.
Right. So that's another kind of fun way. Think about mineral energy. And then you think about, like, animalistic people are much more passionate, much more emotional, much more just vibrant people. Those people you look for, animal remedies made from an animal source. And then the flowers are interesting, too. The plants and trees and flower group, they can be very similar to actual flowers in that they're really affected by weather, by the sun. They're really kind of... more a victim, more changeable victim. There's all these analogies you can make between the exact plant and these kind of people that are, of course, that need a plant remedy. There's even a newer branch of homeopathy called the sensation method, which proposes that people know what remedy they need. And if you talk to them long enough about the different sensations, that they will identify themselves what remedy they need. So that's, a fascinating offshoot of homeopathy.
Poetic.
Yeah, there's definitely a spiritual woo-woo side to it. And it can be very many years of study and memorizing the symptoms, but then it's called the art and science of homeopathy, because the science is one part of it, but then the art of it is just, it is listening to your intuition. I had one time a vomiting thing ran through the family, and I had a dream that I needed charcoal to cure me. Well, what's one of our top remedies for vomiting is Carboveg, charcoal. So,
wow.
I took the remedy, and it helped. And I mean, how could I have a dream about that?
That's wonderful, yeah.
Similar thing have happened to other homeopaths. Like, you just have a dream, I need this remedy. And sure enough, they're right. So you can get these other intuitive hits as well. And, especially here in Costa Rica, it seems to work well. I use my rational brain a lot of the time to come up with top remedies that I can justify logically, rationally. But then it can be really hard to know which specific remedy is for this person. So then I use my other part of the brain, my intuitive side, with a pendulum. Now, this is just something I do. This is not part of classical homeopathy,
mm-hmm.
but it works.
Oh, yeah.
When the rational brain has limits, it can't seem to get past. Mm. Sometimes the intuitive brain can come in and just say, yeah, give this remedy. And especially back to autism, it all loops around, but back to the autistic kids, I feel like they are forcing us to use more of our intuitive side because they can't communicate like normal, logical, you know, left brain people. Mm-hmm. So you're almost forced with autistic kids if they can't tell you how they feel. That's the pendulum and the muscle testing, the kinesiology, intuitive work, past lives, all this alternative stuff, I think is getting a chance to really come to the forefront, which is so interesting right now with the times of change that we're in.
Wow. Well, you know, we have to say goodbye, which I don't want to do, so maybe you'll come back on again. But I would like you to leave people with your contact information, like a website or your email address or something, and tell a tiny bit about the Canary Party.
Sure, yeah. So my email address is lrhines2@gmail.com. And that's given that I'm in Costa Rica this year and maybe Boston next year, that's probably the best way to reach me. Mm-hmm. For the Canary Party is a new political party, again, founded by the parents of autistic children, trying to warn other parents about the levels of corruption in our government, our FDA, the pharmaceutical, the media. It really does a good job uncovering that and fighting for the rights of over 50% of our children are chronically ill. Mm-hmm. So if you go to canaryparty.com, I believe it's .com.
It's .org, I think.
That's a good place, and they have many. .org, I'm sorry, canaryparty.org. That's mm-hmm. a good one. Thinking Moms Revolution is a great one. I just love the title itself.
Thinking Moms Revolution, wonderful. Sorry.
Yeah, Thinking Moms Revolution, Google that. And NVIC.org is a nonprofit that gives the true scoop on vaccine pros and cons, balanced review.
Wow.
For people to
wonderful.
Do their own research on that important matter.
Wow. I'm really, you really touched me deeply. I'm going to do some reading. I haven't read on homeopathy for quite a while, but I think it's time to do some more research. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, we have a National Center for Homeopathy, which is homeopathic.org, or just Google National Center for Homeopathy. They do a great magazine for the layperson, and their website is full of things to research.
I'm going to get into it. And Linda Rhines, thank you so much for spending this time with us, and thanks for meeting me in Costa Rica. It's a memorable time for me.
Okay, thank you, Veronica. It's been a pleasure.
And for me. And for everyone at home, thank you so much for listening. This is Veronica Entwistle saying, any feedback? VeronicaEntwistle.com. Many blessings and good night.